We are going to discuss now extractive industries, and I give the floor to Tim.
Thanks, Hans. Good afternoon. So the extractive activities research project is now part of the active research programme, having been a research pipeline project. And the paper that's been prepared provides a brief summary of the history of the project and its projects, which is summarised on pages 4 to 12. A reminder of the 2010 discussion paper and some of the feedback that we received, and that's on pages 14 to 19, and then an overview of the initial steps that are being taken on the project on page 21, and a request for feedback on page 22. Now, since most of you were at IFAS yesterday, when I went through the paper in a little bit more detail, I don't propose to go through it again, but I mean, the slides are relatively self-explanatory, and if any members do have any particular questions, then I'm happy to take those as we open the discussion up. Now, whilst the feedback at IFAS was limited, and that in itself may reflect that the project's been dormant for a while and has only just restarted, there were two particular points that were made, and that was it's important to get the scope right, and it's important to determine the accounting issue that needs to be solved and communicate that issue. And the board will certainly have to consider those types of things as it commences this project. So turning to the questions on page 22, the first question's a question that has been asked to the four national standard setters that were involved in the original discussion paper in 2010. And that's whether you're aware of any significant changes in extractive activities in your jurisdictions that you think, well, since 2010, that you think the board should be aware of as it starts its research, and which could have, for example, changed the findings or the conclusions within the discussion paper. And secondly, to help start develop the problem statement, we ask whether users in your jurisdiction are aware of and how do they actually deal with the diversity in accounting practices in the extractive industry. So I'll open the discussion up now for any questions on the paper, any additional feedback on those two questions on page 22. And also, if you've got any views on, I'd be interested to hear if you've got any views on what steps you would recommend the board to take next in developing that problem statement and ultimately the scope of the project. Thank you.
Are the extractive industries still extracting?
Yes.
Linda?
You want me to go first? Sure. All right. So one of the big changes in Canada since 2010 is we adopted IFRS. So during that adoption, we had some very unhappy companies. I think it's fair to say that they struggled with the loss of some rather specific guidance and struggled to figure out how best to deal with IFRS. That said, they have gotten there, and so they aren't clamoring for anything new or different to be opened up. So I'll just admit that and say that's true. So with that in mind, one of the things that we're going to think about while we're participating in the official update in your working group is, you know, kind of the cost-benefit of, you know, what the scoping might be in terms of any improvements that are needed and what you might choose to do, because we think it'll be very important at the outset that you communicate whatever problem it is you're trying to address in terms of fixing it. We think that there's some potential that you could land in saying if we improve disclosures, that might be the best buck for the money and time that we spend doing this. Having said that, you know, we did start by looking at some of the stats. So in Canada, the extractive industries are roughly 44% of our total number of entities that are listed. So it's a big number of entities, and it's about 20% of our market cap. And of those, about 10% still utilize U.S. GAAP versus about 90% utilizing IFRS. In terms of some of the significant changes, obviously there was the change to IFRS. There has been a huge decrease in commodity prices, at the time, 2010 and forward, that has some come back in some respects now. So that has had a big impact on the industry. IPOs have started coming back now because once the commodity prices started recovering, the business had gone dormant in terms of going public, and now we're seeing more IPOs. There's things like stream financing arrangements, which can provide, there's upfront funding provided, but it can provide ownership type rights. There's other types of risk sharing going on. And we're also going to be looking at the impact of the new joint arrangement standards, because all of that stuff is prevalent in this industry. Mm-hmm. So not really sure kind of what issues we're going to find when we dig into that, that would have an impact on whatever it is you think you want to do. So all of that said, our view is that it's going to be important for you to have data around what the practices in the industry are now. You can't just go back to 2010 and assume that you should take that forward. And you should really think about the best way to spend your staff time and your effort, your board time in terms of efforts, in terms of moving things forward. And the other thing that we are looking at, too, I don't want to forget to mention this, is, but we've talked to our securities regulators. We're going to take a look at the issues they're seeing in the sector in terms of reporting problems so that we can get back to you on those. And I've got a few things that there's, again, they lend themselves to disclosure fixes in terms of if you have something that you're not developing and it's laying dormant, when do you think you're going to develop it? And which are your most important properties? You know, things like that where we're not seeing those disclosures and users are telling us that they would like to see those disclosures, which is where we got the notion that perhaps some update in disclosures might be a better opportunity than a wholesale revamp. More to come, but that's kind of where we are since the last time we talked to you, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay?
Chris.
So we're still at a very early stage in trying to go back and actually talk to our industry. Some of the preliminary comments would suggest that all of the issues that were identified in the first 2010 paper still exist. So we didn't have the issue of having to move to IFRS. We'd already moved to IFRS. And we've always had a very high proportion of junior miners in Australia who...
What?
They're called junior miners.
Hmm.
So they basically go out and raise $5 or $10 million and they go off and do a bit of research and then find they have nothing and then they keep going back again. So as I've mentioned a couple of times to staff, my general observation is that you actually have two competing views in the industry because you have the big miners who, frankly, don't care about exploration and evaluation because most of it's not material to them, so whether they capitalise or expense is really irrelevant. But it is actually quite important to the junior miners because what they want to do is show people that what they've actually gone and done has had some value, whether or not they've actually ended up with something that's going to be a go-forward mine. Having said that, because there has been some impairment issues the last couple of years, I have heard a rumour that some of them are less than enthusiastic now about having that expenditure capitalised. But that's really one of the key issues, is that there is this dichotomy about whether you should or shouldn't capitalise. So they're still asking for guidance around, if I am going to capitalise, what's my area of interest that enables me to continue capitalising from that perspective. So that's not a new issue, and it's still the same issue. As Linda mentioned, the joint venture standard is seen as being particularly problematic for them, and I think the history was there was almost going to be an example in the joint venture standard, and then it actually got pulled because there was quite a lot of confusion about whether it was actually going to change quite a bit of practice, and I don't think people had really thought that through. So I think your scoping is going to be very important. Interesting enough, and again, it's not a wide range of people. We have had one entity at least say to us, we don't want a specific standard. So we think it is important that we're actually seen to be consistent with the others, and that it's perhaps examples, or if there's a need for specific guidance, it's within the standard. It's not saying you guys are separate and unique. And one of them actually said, we don't want to be seen to be completely different to the pharma industry, and I don't think they want to see sector-specific standards. So you asked them a question about users and whether or not they understand the dichotomy of what the different practices are. So again, we haven't actually spoken to any users. This is the view of the preparers. They've said they think that the bigger analysts and brokers that do focus in their area understand what the differences are, but there are a lot of mum and dad investors, particularly in Australia, which have just got no idea that there is any differences or possible differences in what the accounting actually could be. I think the other thing that's actually really concerning to them is that they already have quite a bit of disclosure that's outside the financial statements. So they're quite often asked to do things like, so in Australia, most entities don't have to do quarterly reporting, but these types of entities actually do. So they actually have to provide information about how their cash has disappeared usually over the quarter. And the ASX already requires extensive disclosures through, it's called the JORC reporting, but it's equivalent to the different types of reserves and resources reporting that's quoted in that 2010 research paper. So there is already some stuff, but for me, I think that's actually the key for this project, is that that's probably the most important piece of information about these types of companies. It's actually outside the financial statements and it's not audited in any way, shape or form. Occasionally, bits of it creep into the financial statements through depreciation disclosures, etc. But it's not generally where you would expect that the most important information would actually be. So I think there's certainly some merit if nothing else, in at least dealing with some of the disclosures. Now, whether that's management commentary or whether it's in the financial statements is obviously a different issue. But my strong preference would be that some of these disclosures need to start to get you through into the financial statements themselves. It'll be a case of trying to work out how all those things fit together. Again, very limited feedback so far, but the general thing was, yes, if you could get some consistency in what that reserves and resourcing classification requirements were for accounting purposes, that would actually be a helpful outcome.
Andrew?
Thanks. Only very initial discussions at FRAG, and in terms of developments in the sector, I don't think we heard anything in our discussion that hasn't been mentioned already. On the question, do users understand the diversity of accounting practice and what do they do about it? Again, based on very limited input, I would say the answer seems to be yes, they understand the diversity, but I'd endorse Chris's comment that a great deal of use is made of information outside the financial statements, which could be taken as an argument why we need to do something in the financial statements, or could be taken as the opposite argument, but I'll mention it anyway. A couple of other particular points to think about in terms of scoping the project. For many years now, I've been just talking about how to account for proceeds from testing of PP&E and the elusive potential amendments to IAS 16, but the more I've been involved in those discussions, the more it seems to be predominantly, if not exclusively, but predominantly an extractive industries issue. Well, certainly there are particular considerations for extractive industries, so I think that's something to sort of throw into the mix. And also from time to time in among different European institutions, there are calls for more guidance on stranded carbon assets, which is sort of playing into comments that have been made already about impairment. It's not totally clear to me personally that there's a gap in the literature in this area, but some might see that differently. I think it's certainly something to think about whether some more specific sectoral guidance, educational or not, might be useful. That's about it so far. You've got all the right volunteers working on the industry developments.
Noble?
Yes, thank you. Extractive activities is not a major activity in Japan, but there are a few Japanese companies that have adopted IFRS that do have that have engaged in extractive activities, and all of these companies have previously used US GAAP, in particular the successful efforts method. And so in terms of Japanese companies engaged in this activity, we do have comparability among those companies, but worldwide we do know that there are diversity in practice. In terms of any changes since the 2010 discussion paper, we are not aware of any significant changes since then. So I think the issues are still valid, and we haven't identified any new issues that have come up.
Any other comments for the staff to take away? If that's not the case, then I think we have
just the wrap-up. Just the update section. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, are you flying home tonight?
Again.